Time to be joined by Stephen Brunt. Good morning, Stephen. How are you today?
Good morning.
It's a beautiful day in the world of sports, Stephen, as it feels like evil is about to be vanquished, good is about to win, the Yankees are about to be eliminated from baseball's postseason. This American League Championship Series feels as good as over, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm watching last night in the howling wind at Yankee Stadium. Just so many things about that game just kind of suggested that this... You know, it's a great Yankees team. You know, hats off to them, and you know, Aaron Boone's a great manager, and all of that. But you know, they've stopped hitting in this. And again, credit to the Houston Astros pitching staff. But the core of that team does not look anything like the murderer's row it looked like the rest of the year. They stopped catching the ball, making errors that they wouldn't have made any other time this year. CC Sabathia throwing his last major league pitch and hobbling off the mound after being brought in, kind of in a desperation situation as a reliever, and just understanding that you know you've got Verlander and Cole standing there waiting for you, fully rested, and that you've got to win three in a row against you know a Houston team that is kind of built like an old. You know, we talk a lot about kind of newfangled ways to use your pitching staff and openers and bullpen games and all of that stuff, but because of the rain delay, the postponement in that series. That you know what I think when you look back at it, that weirdly enough is going to be really significant because that would have been a bullpen game for both teams. The Houston bullpen's pretty good, but the Yankees bullpen, the Yankees bullpen is tremendous. It might have been a way for the Yankees to claw back in and even the series up, but with the delay, it meant that it just lined up those Houston starters. And the weakest link in theory would have been Zach Greinke pitching at Yankee Stadium. He pitched pretty well last night. So, yeah, it's done. And, you know, I think with some confidence you can look ahead to a classic, you know, in terms of pitching matchups, World Series. Not the one I don't think a lot of people expected, but, boy, that could be fun. And, as I say, it'll be kind of old-fashioned. It'll be like starter versus starter, which is not something we've talked about much in the recent history of baseball.
Bigger picture with the Yankees, Steven, I know it's been talked about a little bit throughout the year, certainly was heavy at the end of July, but how much criticism should Brian Cashman be under because he didn't do a lot to that rotation? And really, for the last couple of years, with him at the helm, they have not been the Yankees of old, i.e. selling prospects to bring in big names to win championships. How much criticism should Brian Cashman be under right now?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, and that'll be an interesting discussion, you know, if and, you know, more likely when they get eliminated here, because this is obviously, you know, getting to the ALCS, you know, for the New York Yankees and their fans is not, that's not a moral victory. You know, it's not a moral victory in a season when you win more than 100 games. And it's a legitimate criticism. Now, that said, you know, that's kind of, it's not just the Yankees who are acting that way, you know, former kind of big market, big money teams in terms of being reluctant to deal away prospects. Like nobody wants to do it anymore. That's one of the biggest changes in you know, that and kind of the softening of the free agent market for guys, older guys. Teams are holding on to their prospects. No one wants to spend into the luxury tax if they can help it. No one wants to dump money on guys who are heading into their 30s. So, you know, that I think what Brian Cashman's doing is something that's kind of in line with what everybody else is doing. But, you know, when you look at that rotation, you know, you knew that was the weak link as we headed towards the trade deadline at the end of July, the single trade deadline in baseball now. You kind of looked at that and said, you know, they've got a great bullpen. They're scoring a ton of runs. You know, they're going to be a challenge for anybody, but that rotation, their first three guys, doesn't quite line up with, you know, some of the other, like Houston or, you know, well, it's specific. I think all of us thought they'd end up against Houston in the ALCS. But, again, I think maybe it comes back in part to that idea that that's not the only way to win baseball games now. That, you know, if you have a great rotation, all you need is a guy to go out there and go through the lineup twice, maybe even just once, and then throw it over to your bullpen. I think they hope for better from James Paxton, to say the least. You know, I think maybe they thought he coming back and being healthy pitched well down the stretch. Maybe he's the guy. It's hard to lay it on Masahiro Tanaka because I think he pitched pretty well. But I guarantee you, you know, you've hit on it. That will be the discussion in New York. And you know, who's the biggest free agent this winter? Well,
Garrett
it's going to be
Cole.
A guy named Garrett Cole. You know, if you're a Yankee fan, you'd say that's exactly what we need. You know, a legit number one. CeCe's done. You know, Severino's back, but boy, there's the best pitcher in baseball right now, and all it's going to cost is money, and we got lots of money. So that, that may well be where the discussion heads.
When we talk about a new era in baseball, do you think this year might be a bit of a course correction a little bit? Because you have an Astros team who did give up a lot of prospects to go out and get not only Zach Greinke, but also the trade with the Blue Jays. And you have a Nationals team that, they have some young players and some very exciting young players, but also Howie Kendrick is winning the LCS MVP. They're a team that went out and signed some 30-somethings, and now both of them likely are going to be competing for the World Series.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Now, of course, the Astros have got such a deep farm system still that they can deal some guys away. And again, maybe some of the guys they're dealing away are just like Derek Fisher, where guys who used to have a prospect shine, and then when you actually see them, in the light of day in a Blue Jay uniform, you go, hang on a second, why did anybody think he was good? They're dealing from strength. And they still have they haven't depleted their minor league system. They still have a great minor league system. I think the biggest problem with the Astros is that they gave everybody the idea that if you go out and lose 100 games 3 or 4 years in a row, you can build a dynasty, which it's worked for them, but I'm not sure it's going to, it hasn't worked for a bunch of other teams. So, they've kind of created that model. But yeah, like a guy like Howie Kendrick in a way is the kind of classic postseason story, isn't he? The veteran guy who, saves his, has a little more left in the tank than you thought. I don't think anybody was excited about Howie Kendrick being part of that team as they headed into the playoffs. But here we are. He's the guy, the most valuable player in the LCS for them. And I think that still applies, right? You can still have the kind of unlikely veteran pop up, but I don't think it's gonna. I think in terms of kind of overall roster construction, I think the die is cast in terms of where teams are going. I think that trend is going to take a long – well, I don't know that trend is ever going to reverse.
Chatting with Stephen Brunt here on Boomer in the Morning without Boomer on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Peter Klein and Will Nault.
Well, Stephen, I guess we can shift gears a little bit. You can talk World Series with the guys next week. We know who's going to play, and it should be a fun one for sure. You look at the CFL, 3 weeks to go. Calgary, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg all battling for positioning in that West Division. Calgary's got Winnipeg on a home-and-home and then finished with BC. Saskatchewan has BC and a back-to-back with Edmonton with maybe Trevor Harris, and certainly doesn't look like he's going to play as of right now. And if he does play, who knows how healthy he is. How do you handicap that West, and whose schedule would you rather have if you're Calgary or Saskatchewan?
Boy, that's a really it's a good question because there's so many ifs in there, aren't there?
I guess
the one thing I'm looking at there, and again, I think Calgary is probably going to win the West right now. But and again, I wouldn't bet a whole lot of my own money on that. But that is kind of where I would lean right now. I'm interested to see what the Bombers do in terms of their quarterback situation between now and the end of the year. Because they kind of righted the ship a little bit last week, and a better game last week, but acquiring Zach Caleros, I just wonder if they're really going to use him, and he's a guy who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, so it's a rental. Everybody knows the history with injury and the concussion that's kept him out. Since Simone Lawrence hit him, kept him out almost this entire year. He feels very much like damaged goods. And, I honestly don't think he's ever been the guy that he was for Hamilton before he blew out his knee. It wasn't a concussion. I don't think he's ever been quite the same guy since then. But it's hard to see the Winnipeg Blue Bombers playing in a Grey Cup with Strebler as their quarterback. I don't see it. And I think Bomber fans, They had a game manager in there and looked really good and were the best team in the league for the first half of the season. So do they take the chance, try and get Caleros game ready as quickly as possible, and try and get him out there before the end of the season? Because in order to win in the playoffs, you're probably going to need better quarterbacking in the West. You're probably going to need better quarterbacking than you have. And who's assuming? Zach Caleros wants to play, so he's the guy assuming the risk. But I think everybody, if you follow the CFL, you're going to be holding your breath with that guy out there. It is. It's a really interesting calculation from Winnipeg's point of view, because they're a good football team in a lot of ways. Obviously, they can run the ball as well. They're very good defensively, but the Achilles heel of that team right now is the most important position on the field, and they might have a solution, but it's a risky solution. So, man, to me, that's the most interesting story in the league as we head to the finish line.
I think there's no question about that, and it's funny how the perception has changed, right? Because at the beginning of the year, everyone's like, well, I don't know if they can win a great cup with Matt Nichols as their quarterback, and now I think a lot of Bomber fans in particular would do a lot to get that guy back. So it's just funny how that entire perception has changed.
Yeah, no, it is, right? Like, no one's excited about Matt Nichols, right? I'd say game manager.
That's right, yeah.
Not gonna light it up, right? But, yeah, he right now, you know, relative to what they've seen since Matt Nichols went down, they take it. Like, everybody in Bomberland would take it. So can Caleros come in and be that guy? You know, because, again, maybe he doesn't have to be an all-star. Maybe he just has to be a little better. Or maybe they use the two guys, because, you know, obviously Strebler's strength is you know, his ability to run the football himself. I don't think he's ever going to be a classic passing quarterback. Do you try and use both guys? But I love Zach Caleros. I think he's a super confident guy too. He wants to be back out on the field, and all of the cliches apply about his kind of desire to play. But it's just, you know, having watched him get his brain rattled again this year, and kind of thinking about what you know about brain injuries now, or what we think we know about brain injuries now and the long-term consequences, I it's kind of hard to watch him with a clear conscience. It really is.
Speaking of injuries, we had a laugh yesterday in Calgary, because as soon as the Tavares news was out, we had about 9 emails. There was straight panic. The sky is falling on the system-wide Rogers Sportsnet email. Tavares is out with a broken finger, and I don't know how they're going to possibly move on, Mr. Brunt.
Well, yes, I think they're going to continue to show up for games. I think that's last I heard. They're not going to concede all the games until he's back, but... there's a lot at stake for a lot of people with that Leaf team this year. Maybe including the company we work for, because they would like them to be good. They do draw a crazy audience across the country. They've had a scuffling start to the season, as you may have heard, but most of the fretting to this point has been around things like backup goaltending and the composition of the fourth line, right? Stuff that, you know, a good team's problems, right? Things that you fret over if you're otherwise a really good team. But losing Tavares, and again, it's 2 weeks plus, right? 2 weeks and they reevaluate him. He didn't know the finger was broken immediately, so that tells you maybe that it wasn't, certainly wasn't a displaced fracture. It's probably not super, super serious. But the interesting thing with the Leaf team is going to be, and I know people in other places delight in their troubles, if they kind of scuffle into Christmas... because the assumption is, the widespread assumption in Leafland was, once you got the off-season stuff done and you signed Mitch Marner to his contract, that it's just the regular season's a formality and off we go to the playoffs, and then they got to try and finally win a round. But if they're kind of middle of the pack or lower in the East at Christmas time, and they can't do anything at the deadline, because they can't, they're so up against the cap, they cannot make a move mid-season this year unless they move money out. They can't even improve their backup goaltending situation. They don't have the money to do that. The pressure is going to build, and I don't think they would fire Mike Babcock mid-season, but he is clearly the sacrificial lamb if this season doesn't go well. That's where this thing turns, fairly or unfairly. So, yeah, the Babs
making
watch.
My day right now, Steven.
The rest of Canada may delight in this, but that's where it's... So, yeah, get ready for some soap opera. That's the very least you're going to get a bit of soap opera out of Toronto.
I hope you're right. God, that makes me happy just thinking about it, if he gets canned mid-season.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of people in the game, especially players and guys who played for him, who seem to feel that way. It's funny. It's a funny thing.
Yeah, weird. Mike has never played for... Oh, wait, yeah, you have.
Yeah, sorry, I tried twice. Yeah. Didn't go so well.
Oh, that's too bad. You're usually not vocal about this, though. I'm surprised you're coming out like this.
I usually keep
right
it
now
to myself. But no, I'm definitely not the only one. It'd be nice to hear a couple more guys come out and say something, but for right now, I'm on an island.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, it's... it's but yeah, you sense that that is like, yeah, not a lot of tears would be shed. But, you know, it's, look, it's a classic situation, right? Because when they elevated Kyle Dubas to general manager, he's not Kyle Dubas's hire. It's pretty clear in a lot of ways they're, you know, not on the same page. And, you know, they have built a hockey team in Toronto that is a very specific kind of hockey team. You know, it is a skill and speed team, and there are a lot of people who wonder, not, you know, again, not that Babcock's teams have necessarily been tough teams. Certainly they weren't in Detroit. But there's just a lot of skepticism about whether that kind of team can win. You know, whether you can get through four rounds of the playoffs playing the kind of hockey they play. And Babcock, of course, has been, you know, Mr. Passive Aggressive in press conferences, letting people know about the parts of the roster he's not happy with. So, you know, the young, bright general manager and the old, crusty, greatest coach in hockey, trademark registered, yeah. You know, yeah, look at my Olympic gold medals. Yeah, just ask him. Exactly. Yeah, so, yeah, it's, you know, it's, I don't get it. Just ask. Yeah, so it's, you know, it is... It's good to inject a little bit of human drama into this thing, because otherwise, you know, it wasn't going to be the most, you know, drama-filled regular season with that team. They, you know, they will be good, and I think they should be good. And, yeah, let's see if they can beat anybody in the first round. But, again, I think we're going to have a little bit of juice in the next few weeks if they don't start playing better.
Oh, good. I was worried we weren't going to have a lot of Toronto Maple Leaf stuff to talk about. I was very concerned.
But can't you at least enjoy their misery? Can't you at least enjoy their...
Oh, yes, great. We definitely enjoy that.
Yeah, well, get ready. You know, buckle up. You're going to get some.
All right.
The true team of Toronto, the team of the North, really, raising a banner on Tuesday. Is there any buzz in Toronto about this Raptors team right now, or is it all blue and white?
No, it's no. Oh no, there's lots of look. You know what? It's the city has changed. There is buzz, even though there's no anticipation that they're going to repeat because of who's not going to be there to get his ring. It's, you know, the weirdest post championship thing I've ever experienced in any sport because of the, you know, the giant hole there that the guy who led them having left after just the one season, like the one. It's like it never happened. But in terms of, you know, fan interest and kind of talk, that banner raising next week and the ring distribution and all this stuff will be a far bigger story than anything the Leafs do next week, unless they fire Mike Babcock. I'm not saying it's 50-50 now. If the Raptors kind of fall back and are the, you know, a sixth seed in the East this year and doesn't look like they have any real championship aspirations. But, you know, look, people are talking about whether they can get Giannis in another year when he goes to free agency, right? Like, that, it's turned into a basketball town. It really has. And, look, if the Leafs don't make progress this year and the Raptors hang in, and, again, there's kind of talk about the next superstar to come to town. I'm not saying it's kind of a complete change in the guard, but it is way closer to that than you would imagine, than I would have imagined. 2 or 3 years ago.
Everyone just keeping those Toronto sports headlines warm until the Argos come charging back.
And then there's the Argos, yes.
Yeah. Steven, any big plans for the weekend?
I'm going to, it looks like it's going to be cold, and but sunny here. I'm going to clean up, do the fall cleanup of the yard before the snow falls, and take a deep breath from doing 3 hours of radio a day. You know what that's like.
A bit of an idea, yeah. We don't have to look as nice because we're not on camera like you guys are, but...
We look great, don't we? Yeah.
Oh,
we
yes.
Are. It's a couple of matinee idols there, boys.
Yeah. I was like, oh, is this... GQ has a show now? Oh, no, this is just us. Oh, okay. thanks as always, Stephen. We'll chat next week.
All right, see you guys.